If you run a company or manage a team, hiring qualified people quickly can make or break your business. Imagine a position of need going unfilled for weeks or even months because you just can't seem to find the right candidate. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. This makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, there's no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts. You only pay for results on your job post. Just in the last minute that I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data, worldwide. Now that is fast. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. Listeners will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BWN. Go to Indeed.com/BWN right now to support this podcast. Indeed.com/BWN. Terms and conditions apply.
Craving your next action-packed adventure? Audible delivers thrills of every kind on your command, like Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir, where a lone astronaut must save humanity from extinction, narrated with stunning intensity by Ray Porter. From electrifying suspense and daring quests to spine-tingling horror and romance in far-off realms, unleash your adventurous side with gripping titles that'll keep you guessing. Discover exclusive Audible originals, hotly anticipated new releases, and must-listen bestsellers that hook you from the first minute. Because Audible knows there's no greater thrill than the one that speaks to you. Discover what lies beyond the edge of your seat. Start your free 30-day trial at audible.com/WonderyUS. That's audible.com/WonderyUS.
This is the Carolina Insider from Learfield.
We're back. It's the Carolina Insider, Jones, Adam. And I have something important to say, Adam. Only one of us is wearing a tie for this podcast. You just dressing down now?
You're likely to never see me wearing a tie on the pod. In fact, I was thinking about untucking my shirt before we started, but I decided not to.
And waving it around your head like a helicopter?
Well, this is the last pod of 2016.
I think all rules are out the window.
I think what really set the tone for the pod was when you came into Pod World headquarters and then took off your jacket and threw it down. Like Coach Williams does when he gets angry. So it was like
at Kentucky, just throw it right at Seventh Woods, who unsuspectingly has the jacket hit him in the face.
Yeah, so I think that set the tone for what kind of pod it's going to be.
An aggressive, perhaps a little angry pod. But here's the thing, Adam. We're going to talk about the Sun Bowl.
Yeah.
I mean, that can't make you sad.
No.
We're also going to talk about the Tar Heel basketball side of things. They did play one more time since we last joined you. That was what turned out to be a pretty convincing win against a decent Northern Iowa team, fueled by just a flurry of domination over the last really 24 minutes. It was a one-point game with 4:07 to go in the first half, and from that point forward, it was all Tar Heels from that point moving forward. So we'll talk about that some. I think we got to at least address this, Adam, because we got to at least say this, and then we're going to move on from it. I know everyone's probably either interested, well, probably both of these things, interested and tired of the NCAA news. Adam and I, being employed by and or representatives of the athletic department, cannot talk about it. We're not going to. We've been asked not to. So that's what we're going to do. We're not going to address it. Period. The end. Past saying that Roy Williams was asked about it after the Northern Iowa game this past Wednesday. And his response, Adam, was something to the effect of he had to change his goal on this situation because he originally wanted this situation to be completed before he retired. And now he said he just wanted it to be over before he died. And I think, while in a very Roy Williams type of way, that does sum up the overriding feeling, which is, this just needs to be over at some point. And so hopefully that will be the case. And unfortunately, Adam and I are not going to talk about any details because that would probably be the end of the pod, and nobody wants that. All right. So with that out of the way, let's get to Carolina basketball. We'll start with the Hoopsters. I don't know if I've ever called them that. But Carolina against Northern Iowa. And a couple of things about that game, Adam, and something else that I'd like to address. Number one, I thought it was a nice bounce-back game for the Tar Heels. I think you could tell in the first 15 minutes or so, it was just they were dragging a little bit. Northern Iowa also, one thing I will say for Carolina, they have played dramatically different types of teams in this pre-conference season. And I think that will be a benefit. Really saw it in these two games, I think, against Kentucky and then Northern Iowa, whereas Kentucky was up and down. Northern Iowa was much more deliberate, had a lot of guys outside the three-point arc, just had their offense starting very high in the half court. And so just a very different style of team. And it seemed like it took Carolina a little bit to get adjusted to that. And once the Tar Heels did, man, it was a kicking.
You're right, though. That'll be so beneficial in the ACC because there's more than a couple of teams that are going to want to play that way. And you get kind of spoiled in some of the non-conference games like that Kentucky game running up and down the floor. Once the ACC comes around, that may be the end of that for the most part.
Teams aren't going to run with them in the league. Duke will run some. I'm just trying to think anybody else that might do it. Notre Dame, not really. They play a lot like Northern Iowa and like Duke, because I thought Northern Iowa kind of played like Duke, honestly. As far as their approach to the game, although I do think Duke plays a little faster than the Panthers would. I can't think of anybody, really.
I don't really know anything about Georgia Tech under
Pastner. Yeah, it might be different. Wake Forest does like to run some.
Yeah.
So they may try and do it.
Yeah.
But even State, which traditionally, State likes to move pretty quickly, but they very deliberately have slowed it down in the last several meetings with Carolina. Florida State likes to run a little bit. They've got some good athletes. Miami does as well. But, okay, the whole point of that is, for the most part.
The problem is now there's 800 teams in the
league. Let's go through every single team in the league. To your point, yes, Carolina is not going to see many more teams that do what Kentucky tried to do as far as going up and down the court.
But that was the best points per possession in a game this year for Carolina. I really like watching this team pass the ball. And it's not just the passes they make. I was surprised. If I think back to that game on Wednesday night, I think Carolina had 20 assists on 34 field goals. It seemed like a lot more than that.
What a keen eye you have.
If I think back.
For assists.
But it seemed like a lot more than that. But it's also the passes they don't make. They don't make passes that put a teammate in a bad position or catch the ball in the wrong place on the floor. And Tar Heels had just 5 turnovers. And Northern Iowa had been one of the best teams in the country at forcing turnovers percentage-wise. And Carolina didn't do it all. They only had 5. Nate Britt almost had as many steals as Carolina had turnovers. Nate Britt's got some quick hands.
Well, this has been such an interesting stretch for Nate Britt, because I do think Nate Britt's playing some good defense, and he has done some good things. But, dude, he cannot get Santa to give him a made field goal to save his life right now. He was 1-for-5 in the game against Northern Iowa. And hold on, let me go to the sheet here, Adam. That tells me that Nate is now 11-of-49 in his last 7 games. That's not very good. And so I think we talked about this some after he had those elevated minutes in the games against Davidson and Tennessee. He's doing some things really nicely. Yeah, in fact, I thought this was a really good example of this. I think he came up with a steal right before, I think it was him who came up with the steal, but Carolina did as a team, right before halftime against Northern Iowa. So Nate started pushing it, and the break was on, and then he got to about the free throw line in the front court, realized that the break just went. Northern Iowa had done a good job getting back, and so he circled it back out because there was like a second difference between shot clock and game clock. And so you thought, oh, what a heady play. Mm-hmm. Makes a nice defensive play, heady play to circle it, don't force anything. And then he ends up taking like a fall away 17-footer that just wasn't a very good shot. And so, I mean, it just kind of – I thought that summed it up, that he's doing some nice things, but then it's almost like he so badly wants to get the shot to start falling that he's taking some shots that he knows aren't the best shots for him or for Carolina's team.
I bet if you stretch out his shooting stats that you just talked about to about mid-January of 2016, I bet it's not good.
Mm-hmm. You're right. He shot the ball, and I don't have – that time period, but I mean, he shot the ball very well in the pre-conference last year. Mm-hmm. But you're right; it's just been tough for him. And you feel I feel pretty confident in saying there's going to be a game against like Notre Dame or Florida State or Virginia Tech where Nate Britt goes 7-9 from the field and 3-5 from 3-point range and has like 15 points or whatever. And is a big part of it. But he just has not been able to have that game so far.
He's got to get his offense going towards the rim. Because that's when he's been his best this year, is when he's penetrated. And he's made some ridiculous layups around the basket.
Yep.
He just hadn't done that very much lately. It's been a lot of jump shots.
I don't even know how we got on this tangent of Nate Britt. But I'll also mention, you mentioned the turnovers. Carolina forced Northern Iowa to 17 turnovers. They came in only averaging about 11 a game. So it was a very active defensive game for the Tar Heels.
And it wasn't just Northern Iowa throwing the ball away because Carolina had 12 steals.
Yeah, it was a lot of disruptive defense by Carolina. Not that this is particularly relevant or interesting in the long term, but Isaiah Hicks had the sweetest dunk of the year so far for the Tar Heels. He threw down on that dude for Northern Iowa.
Yes.
Well, Eric made a really good point, Eric Montross, during the game.
I know him.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He talked about, because Isaiah was going to the line, and I mentioned, and he was 1-for-2 at the line in this particular game, and I mentioned that he was shooting 81% going to the game, but that he was only averaging 3 attempts per game. And so Eric brought up the Kentucky game and said, you know, think about it. You know, Isaiah shot the ball 10 times in that game, and he shot it 8 times in this game against Northern Iowa. And he took 2 total free throws in those 2 games. And we know he likes that little turnaround fall away. And he's pretty good at it. I mean, he makes that shot a fair amount of times. But Eric talked about how much more he would like to see, he being Eric, Isaiah get to the line in his like pure post offense. Because a lot of times when he gets fouled, it's when he's driving from the top of the key, or it's in transition, or he gets a rebound and he's going back up. But very few times, it feels like, and I think Eric was correct, does he get it on the block, make him, and then kind of power to the rim. And there was one particular time where the big guy Cook for Northern Iowa, who had been effective offensively, but had been in foul trouble the whole time. He only played, I think, 12 minutes, had 10 points. 13 minutes, had 10 points. And Isaiah got the ball on the right block against this dude who had 4 fouls. They did not double team. I mean, everybody kind of cleared out, and Isaiah shot a fall away on the baseline. And there was a timeout very quickly after that, and C.B. McGrath, Tar Heel assistant, was the first guy to meet Isaiah Hicks coming to the huddle, and he said, Isaiah, he's got 4 fouls. Go at him. And I just thought all of those kind of points that I just mentioned kind of come together to say that Isaiah Hicks at times is like crazy aggressive, but then there's other times where you wish he would just go to the hoop, right?
And when I think about when he surged last year, I always think of him doing what Eric always calls putting guys in the torture chamber,
mm-hmm.
where he would get the ball, make a couple moves, but it was always going towards the basket, not away from. And not like I've got any numbers to back it up, but when I think of him...
Where are your facts, Lucas?
The facts are in my head, which is where I keep them. When I think about when he was playing well, it was because he was playing that way. And I do think he's gotten a little maybe a little overcomfortable with the jump shot. But the good news is that it's only the end of December, and it's time for the surge again in January. And now he's got everybody looking for the jump shot, so wait till the first conference opponent goes for the pump fake, and then Isaiah goes under and yaks on him.
Torture chamber.
That's one of my favorite Eric sayings.
Yeah. Two more individuals.
Hey, wait a second. That Hicks dunk,
yeah.
You know what was so awesome about that?
What?
The passes that led up to it.
Oh, yeah, and it was Meeks who had the last pass, I believe.
When Justin Jackson pushed it up, threw it to Kenny Williams in the corner, who then immediately threw it in to Meeks, which was a great pass. But then Meeks made an even better pass, dropping it to Hicks. That was sweet.
Meeks only had two assists in the game, but they were both really good. The other one was when he passed out of a double team to Barry, who was wide open for a three. Kennedy Meeks had a great game. 18 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists. Just played a very smart game. Seemed to make the right decisions when he was covered single or by one guy. I mean, he used one of his best shots, which is that little jump stop in the paint and the hook shot, very effectively. Passed out of the double teams well. I thought he had, honestly, I was surprised that he only had 2 assists. It felt like he passed better than that. And also, I really thought Justin Jackson had a really good game. I know he didn't score 34 like he did the previous game, but he had 12 points on just 9 shots, so pretty efficient in his shooting. 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, and he covered Jeremy Morgan almost the entire game. And Morgan is not Malik Monk for Kentucky, but
thank goodness
he is a good player. I mean, he came in averaging almost 18 points. And he was 2 of 7, and his 2 made field goals were both really deep threes that you don't mind him shooting. Because if he makes them, you just go, well, all right, he made a 25-foot three-pointer. So I just thought both those guys had really nice games in this particular game against Northern Iowa.
Morgan also had 4 turnovers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was turning it over all the time. By the way, this is the other thing I wanted to say. I said a lot in one point there. The other point is this. Kentucky lost to Louisville the same night that Carolina played Northern Iowa.
Yes.
Did you see Malik Monk's final line?
No.
6 of 17.
Yeah.
This is the one that's going to make you want to punch yourself in the face. 1 of 9 from three-point range. I should have bet my flipping house on that. You know that's going to happen.
Yeah.
That dude could not miss in Vegas. Yeah. Could not miss. And he goes 1 of 9 from 3 against Louisville. That's unbelievable, dude. Well, remember that year? Remember the year? I think it was 09 when Carolina won, of course, the national championship. And BC was the first team to beat them. And then they lost to Harvard the next time they played.
Yeah.
Give me a break.
Yeah.
And when I saw that on Wednesday, legitimately, I think my blood pressure rose. Although I should expect it by now.
Yeah. I wonder if Malik Monk noticed what kind of defense Louisville was playing. Because remember, they asked him after the Carolina game, like, what kind of defense was Carolina playing? He was like, I don't really know what they were doing.
You know, I don't know if he was trying to be – I mean, you and I were both in there. I don't really know if he was trying to be snarky with that comment. I think he was just saying, like, he didn't know
– not know their concepts.
Right, yeah. He didn't know that they were doing any – trying to do something special or whatever like that. And then everybody took it as he was, dissing Carolina, which I don't – think, I mean, maybe he was.
If it had been Fox, I would have thought he was probably dissing Carolina. But Malik Monk seems like a very nice guy, and I hope he saves his next 1 for 9 for when they play the Tar Heels.
Yeah. A couple more things before we get to Sun Bowl. And Oscar Leeser, the mayor of El Paso, who once and for all, Adam, is going to answer the timeless question, does El Paso rock?
And he's the ultimate authority.
Yeah, well. No doubt.
He is the mayor. Like, legitimately, we are having the mayor on the pod.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Grayson Allen. And this has nothing to do with the Tar Heels, obviously. But it does have something to do with Duke, which Carolina fans traditionally are interested in. Yet again, tripping a player. This time against Elon.
I think the weird thing is, I can't think of another case like this in college basketball. Where a guy just keeps doing it, you know? Like, we've had Rick Barnes on the pod, and we talked to some about those Clemson teams that I think had a reputation for playing a little past the echo of the whistle, as Bobby Bowden would say.
I've never heard that. That's a great line.
But this is something different because it's like during the course of the game, but not like on breakaway plays where, you know, it's easy to hammer some guy.
Right.
It's almost – like craftier than that. And I think Grayson Allen is probably smarter than that. Like, you play for Duke. It's on television.
Right.
You're probably not going to get away with it.
Well, and to me, equally as interesting as the action against Elon was his reaction.
Yeah, that was scary.
I mean, it was a full-fledged meltdown.
Yes.
And I think, and obviously, I've never once in my life spoken to Grayson Allen. I don't know what kind of guy he is. I know nothing about him other than he is a good basketball player who plays for Duke, who trips people frequently. What? all these things are true, right?
Put it on his tombstone. Jones just covered everything.
To me, it was kind of like it was a combination of things. One, I think he was mad that he got called for a technical foul. But I think, too, it was almost like he was freaking out because he knew what was coming now.
Yeah.
Because you know, he had to know within seconds of it happening what the reaction was going to be. Because it's going to be, because just like with Carolina or Kentucky or Kansas, if somebody for Duke, and particularly at one of those big-time schools, when somebody like that keeps doing something like that, it's going to get an enormous reaction. And I'm sure it's been difficult to handle. Although, yeah, sometimes you got to pay the piper, right? And so I think he kind of knew as soon as it happened. He was like, I wonder if he was, and again, this is just theorizing. I wonder if he was mad at himself. You know what I mean? Like he was just like, gosh, I can't believe I did that again.
Well, and this is further inside his head than I am privy of being.
At least on a weekday.
But it has to have been difficult to be him, and I don't even really know if he's on Twitter, but I bet he probably is. You know how much junk he's heard on Twitter and probably out in public. Anytime he gets outside the Duke bubble, where they seem to be telling him he's doing fine.
Right.
But when he gets outside of it, I got to imagine he's just heard a ton of stuff. When they go on the road, I know when he came to the Smith Center he did.
Sure.
And I'm thinking everywhere else, too. So I wonder if he was able to so quickly, like that was within 60 seconds of it happening.
Yeah.
Was he able to flip to thinking, I'm going to have to put up with all that junk even more now? Like that's going to be in my life for a whole nother year.
You know what the answer is, though, Adam? Stop tripping people.
That would help.
I just don't get it. And that one, and I only kind of remember the others. I mean, one was against Florida State. I remember that, and there was another one. And I saw this one when it happened. I was waiting for Coach Williams to do our pregame interview up in the basketball office, and they had that game on simply because Carolina's game was coming on the same channel. And so I was just sitting there watching it, waiting. And it was like, what are you doing? They had this, clearest angle possible from the baseline of him just sticking his leg out and tripping the guy. Like, what are you doing? That's not even a natural. Like, I would almost understand it more if you like elbowed guys in the face repeatedly.
Right.
Because that's at least you can see that happening in a basketball game.
Right.
It's not even a natural basketball motion. I don't get it.
I think that this puts him firmly on the Mount Rushmore of hated Duke players, accompanying Leitner, Hurley, Reddick, and now Grayson Allen. I think he's passed by everyone except for those. And only a certain generation remembers Leitner and Hurley.
The other three that you just mentioned seem to the hate, if you will, I think fueled them.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't see Leitner play or Hurley play in person as a professional. But we did see Reddick. And it was like when people were getting hit, that he liked it.
Yeah.
I think, like, Hansbrough kind of liked it. I think it just made him play better. I don't know if that's the case with Grayson Allen. It seems to affect him.
It does seem like it bothers him almost.
Yeah. So, who knows? But, man.
ACC's had a lot of things going on in the league office here lately.
It is going to be a terrific year in the league. That's another thing.
Yeah.
Louisville beat Kentucky. I mean, Louisville's top 10. Virginia's very good. Virginia Tech's a lot better. Clemson just beat South Carolina, a ranked team, the other night. I'm telling you, man, and I know that everybody knew it going in. It's going to be, because, I mean, by the time we do another pod, Adam, Carolina will have started ACC play. And I'm going to tell you, it's going to be a grind. How many games do they play now? 18 currently? Is that right? It's not 20 yet, right?
Not yet.
So what do you think? What record's going to win the league? 15-3? 14-4?
I don't think anybody's getting to 15-3.
Really?
Clemson's the one that surprised me, because I was looking at the KenPom stats the other day.
As you do, yeah.
And Clemson's up there. They're way up there. And Carolina's, the reason that surprised me is Carolina has to go there to Clemson.
Second game.
Second conference game.
And it's on the back half of a
road.
Back-to-back on the road.
Yeah.
It's after New Year. I mean, just kind of just a week back after all the holiday break. It is. It's a tricky game. And that's a hard place to play, I think. I'm pretty sure there. Now, we haven't been in it since it's been renovated. But that's a sneaky hard place to play, I think, in the league.
Yes. I think, and I think part of it is it's not anywhere. Like, if you go to Georgia Tech, you go to Atlanta.
Right.
But you go to Clemson, and you're in Clemson. And it's just hard, and it's Clemson. So you don't, it's not like, you know, you're going to Kansas or UCLA. It's Clemson. So in your head, you kind of think, oh, it's Clemson. But then you get there, and, like, the people are right on top of you. It's loud. That's going to be a tough game.
9-2, Clemson. They have a win at home against Georgia. They beat a good Davidson team by nearly 20. Their losses are to Xavier and to Oklahoma, both by 6 points. And they've beaten Nebraska. They've beaten Alabama. They've beaten South Carolina. So, I mean, I'm not saying they're out there beating Villanova and Kansas and Kentucky, but, I mean, they have some solid wins. That's a good team. And Blossom game's still there. Who's one of the best players in the league?
And I think that's a sneaky way the ACC is good, as everybody talks about all the Hall of Fame coaches. But Brad Brownell is a good coach, and more importantly than that, he's the perfect fit there.
In the right place. That's exactly what I was going to say.
He fits them just right.
Yep. And Buzz Williams at Virginia Tech, Tony Bennett at Virginia,
yep.
Mike Bray at Notre Dame. I mean, these are perfect matches. Larry Nagy at Miami, perfect matches for those teams.
And everyone you just named is beyond the Hall of Fame group that gets all the attention.
That's Coach Williams, Krzyzewski, Boeheim, and Pitino. Yeah, I mean, man, it's tough. And again, I know we've said this before. People don't get how hard the league. They don't.
No.
They don't get how hard it is. Because, I mean, like, what was it a couple years ago? I think it was maybe the 14 season where Carolina was, okay, not as good as they traditionally are. But they had gotten some big wins, like, at Florida State. And these weren't even tournament teams that particular year. And they felt like enormous wins when you left there. Mm-hmm. But the NCAA, remember, that was the year, I think maybe they got an 8 seed.
Yeah.
I think I'm in the right season. And maybe it was the 13 season. But anyway, and it's like the NCAA didn't really value those games. And it's like, man, really? Those are hard places to go win.
I think you might could win the league at 13-5.
Whew, that seems low. That's really low, dude. 13-5.
But that's being said without looking at how the schedule breaks. Like, somebody might have an easier path. Carolina does not have an easy path.
No.
Somebody might.
I'll go 14-4.
Yeah.
That feels right to me.
15-3. Somebody had to get hot or have an easier breakdown.
A couple of tweets.
Okay. Hey, hold on. One more thing about the game. Carolina put over 18,000 people in the Smith Center the Wednesday before Christmas with no students. Everybody wants to whine and complain about the crowd. That's a pretty good crowd.
I know there was some heartache about the buying the tickets in the risers. I thought it was cool. I thought there were a lot. And it seemed like, and again, this was just kind of me picking it up every now and then, but it seemed like the riser folks, the people who are not students who were sitting there, were really into it. And maybe I'm totally wrong, but it felt like, to me, it seemed like they were pretty into it and were enjoying themselves.
My daughters sat there or stood there. So I walked over there a couple times, and it was definitely, obviously, an older crowd other than my daughters in the risers, but they were having so much fun. And so, I mean, kudos to whoever thought of that idea. That was a good idea. and it got some people an up-close look at Carolina basketball who don't usually get it for a game that might have been otherwise dead. And really good crowd. And I bet you the Monmouth game is going to be a good crowd too, because that's the sneaky game.
Yeah, that one's always good.
That nobody
crowd-wise.
Yeah, nobody thinks about it, but everybody's ready to go do something.
Yeah.
And people are at home.
Yeah. Jeremiah Clark and Dwan Drennan were in there in the student section. Just two Tar Heel defensive linemen. Thought I mentioned that. All right, a couple of tweets. This is from at True Blue Joe. He gave us a very funny Christmas Tar Heel name. You remember the when you did the all holiday Tar Heel name?
I do remember that.
He said, "Jack, oh come, Emmanuel."
That's a good one. Yeah.
I thought that was so funny. Woo, all right. Trey Thorne says he's got an extra pair of Maui Jims for me. He's going to bring them to the game.
Are you serious?
Yeah, that's what he said. Trey, I'm holding them. This is a legal binding comment that you've made on Twitter.
When you tweet to Jones, it must come true.
Trey Thorne, you owe me Maui Jims.
Trey, hey, buddy, I'll break my glasses if I get new ones.
Tanya Mason says she's with me. She likes Snoopy's Christmas. She wore out her parents' 45 on the record player.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, Tanya. Me too. It's a sneaky good song. It encompasses the Christmas spirit. Because the Baron knew that Snoopy couldn't fly because he had ice on his wings. So, dude, it's like this lifelong rivalry is about to be... It's about to come to roost, right? Hold on, because the Baron can shoot Snoopy down, and that's it. He wins. But you know what he did, Adam? He didn't. He escorted him to the ground, and they shared a drink. You know why? Christmas spirit. That's telling you, dude. You should think about that tonight, Adam.
That's just like when Duke couldn't get here because of the ice and that lifelong rivalry. If Carolina had gone over there and had a hot chocolate with the Blue Devils while they were sitting on their bus, unable to move.
15-5-1 gets tough.
This concludes your deconstruction of Snoopy's Christmas.
C. Wesley Lindsay, M.D.
Dr. Lindsay.
Yeah, at Dr. Wes Lindsay. So this is a professional opinion.
Medical minute.
How could you forget National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation as far as a top five movie?
I had a couple people mention that to me.
I'm going to say something, dude.
Okay.
I don't think I've seen that movie from start to finish. So I have no opinion on it.
I feel like it's on TBS all the time, but I've never sat down and watched it.
It's one of those where, like, people always have – that's one where, like, people will always, like, quote it, particularly this time of year.
Yeah.
And then they're waiting for my reaction, and I'm just kind of like, ha-ha. Like, I know the dude's name is Clark in there, so normally if they mix in a Clark, I know it's from that movie. But I'm just like, all right.
What you can usually come back with at any time is – hey, you serious, Clark? Like, yeah. I think that's in that movie.
That gets you some street cred?
Yeah, and then you just walk off, because that's all I know.
All right, let me look.
You got my tweet in there from my man Brandon about the Santa Claus?
Yes, Brandon wants to know how we could not mention the Santa Claus with Tim Allen as a Christmas movie.
I met Brandon at the Northern Iowa game. He was very nice and came up and talked to me and said exactly what that tweet said. And...
Brandon's from Cullowhee.
They listened to the pod on their way to the game.
I got to tell you, that's another movie I haven't seen.
Well, you've got a long trip to El Paso coming up, so you got time to catch up.
Angie Flynn McIver? I don't know how to say it. She takes a screenshot of her radio as she is driving to the Northern Iowa game, and it's God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen from Bare Naked Ladies. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, I realized you said Bare Naked Ladies the other day.
I do that.
Do you say naked instead of
I
naked?
Do. Yeah. I thought naked was the weird way until
you
I was
heard
like
the
30.
Other 3 billion people in the world, or however, I don't know, 30 billion?
So we've come to consensus that it is naked.
I've always said naked.
I've always said naked.
See, to me, that would be spelled N-E-K-K-I-D.
Well, I say a lot of things that would be spelled a different way. But that I don't speak them phonetically. I literally.
Maybe this is one we need pod listener help on.
Maybe so. Is it where naked, you're from?
Naked v. Naked.
I guarantee you, it's got to be where you grow up, because I really thought people.
Well, we both grew up in North Carolina, though.
Maybe it's like parts of North Carolina, because I always thought the people who said naked, even right now sitting here, I have to like force my brain to make the A long, naked, and it comes like my lips get all weird. So it still doesn't feel quite right. So I mean, I'll try. I'm like Scrooge trying to say Merry Christmas. I'll do my best, Jones. I'll do my best to say naked if I can. But surely there's someone else out there who says naked. Bare naked. That's what I would say. Bare naked ladies. Bare naked ladies. I will say, I never thought the day would come when a young lady would tweet at me a picture of bare naked for the holidays, which is what that screenshot said, and my wife would be fine with it.
Yeah. Well, Adam, we've matured as going on. All right, this one's from Sean. I think it's Patrizzi. Sean's a regular tweeter.
Yeah.
He is disgusted that I've never heard of Dewey's.
My parents were so mad at you.
That takes something. Your parents never get mad. Oh, especially at me. They love me.
No, they're mad at you now. What do you mean Jones never heard of Dewey's? I had a couple other people say, who has never heard of Dewey's? And I said, Jones.
Yeah. Well.
So I guess you're not familiar with Moravian sugar cake?
It's like you're just saying naked nine times fast right in a row. That's how much sense you're making right now.
I remember when we would sit around the Lucas family table eating Dewey's bakery products and saying naked.
Jamie Welch took a picture of me sitting at the scores table before the Northern Iowa game. And the most disappointing thing is my hairline in this photo.
What? Why did she take a picture of you?
Well, first of all, Jamie's a he. And okay. He was just like, he's a frequent tweeter. He just said, hey, here's Jones doing some work. Which is fine. And he just sent it to me. Like, he didn't, like, send it out.
Oh, okay.
And so I think he was just letting me know he was at the game. But, ugh.
Was he in low power mode when he sent that one?
My hair's in low power mode. All right, let's see if there's anything else here that. Grant's off-court error occurred in 1995. Love Actually was in 2003. Look, Jeff, I know this. That doesn't mean that Hugh Grant's career was ever the same as it was pre-off-the-court incident.
Right.
Post. Now, as I think I mentioned, I said he still had a couple hits. There was Love Actually. There was the one with Drew Barrymore where he's like the 80s rocker who I think it's called Lyric, something with Lyric, Music and Lyrics. I think that's what it's called.
And that was a hit, you say?
Hey. We're big rom-com fans in the Angel household, brother.
That must come on the Hallmark Channel a lot.
Yeah, Channel 55. So, Jeff's an assistant DA in Orange County. Hey, Jeff, good call, dude.
You know, come to think of it, you make some good points. Well, I think the difference is he still made a good movie or two, but in 1995, it was like everything Hugh Grant touched turned to gold.
Yes, everything he touched turned to gold.
In that Notting Hill zone of his career.
Let's also not forget that his wife was Elizabeth Hurley, who still today, 21 years later.
Holy cow. Did you see this? This is news.
All right.
Richard Marx.
Yeah, I know Richard Marx. He's married to Daisy Fuentes.
He's married to Daisy Fuentes?
Yeah.
When did that occur?
Wait a second. What? Fuentes.
She's naked.
What? Why do you say things so weird?
What's her name?
Daisy Fuentes.
That's what I... Fuentes.
No, not Fuentes. Fuentes. Fuentes.
It doesn't have a Z on the end.
No, but it's Fuentes.
No.
It's not Fuentes.
In her hometown, they pronounce it Fuentes.
What is her hometown?
Daisy Land.
El Paso.
Marksville. Richard Marx could compose lyrics
soft,
that would just
soft rock genius
tear your heart out. He's just right here waiting. But here's what I wonder, Jones. I've thought about this a lot this week, even more so than Grayson Allen. So what I read this week is that Right Here Waiting is written about his first wife. Really? Is that awkward now? Can he still play that, or does Daisy F. get all mad at him? Like, oh, Richard, why don't you write something for me? You don't seem like you know the answer.
I don't.
Although, where are you Googling? Are you Googling pronunciation of Daisy F.?
No.
Oh, okay.
I am Googling. First of all, I didn't know that Right Here Waiting was for his first wife.
It is.
Oh, hold on. We got an ad. Man, these ads are slowing me down, brother.
What's it like to be able to have a computer while you do the pod?
This Ooh. Is for me.
Yeah.
Big Richard Marks fan right here now.
Yeah.
Hold on. Just wait for that sax to hit, my friend. All right, hold on. All right, hold on. I got to find my favorite part of this song.
We're not going to get to hear Right Here Waiting, are we?
I can. Hold on.
He's just sitting at the piano pouring his heart out, Jones.
Hold on.
He just opens up a vein and bleeds on the piano.
There's one part of this song that's unbelievably good. Oh, here it is. All right, we're getting there. Hold on. Was that the lead singer from the Bengals?
Susanna Hoffs?
Yeah, hold on, here we go. Hold on. Just wait for it.
Okay.
See, that's the long play by Richard Marks right there. Holy gosh. Oh, Richard Marks. All right, wait. What's the song you wanted?
Right Here Waiting.
All right, hold on. This will be like, this will bring Adam back to hiding in the corner during his middle school dance.
Would anyone like to get naked?
Mom, I wish Daisy Fuentes was here. This is, look, hey, it's just Richard Marks, his coiffed hair, and a piano.
He's still got the same hair.
He really does.
That's impressive. Good job. Hey, good job marrying Daisy F., Richard.
Richard M., I think we can both agree it's Marks.
I've always said Merks. It's a hard X.
I'm not going to lie, this is a good song. All right, so coming up on the 30th, it's the moment we've all been waiting for, really, with the Tar Heels versus Stanford in the Sun Bowl. As we know, Christian McCaffrey is not playing for the Cardinal, as he is elected to focus on getting ready for the NFL draft. And, you know, Adam, even having said that, that doesn't really change my opinion on this game. This game, to me, is going to come down to whether or not the Tar Heels can stop Stanford from running the ball and setting up their play action. And I know that sounds like analysis from like 1984, but that's totally what it is. I mean, it's just if they can force Stanford to throw it more than they want and not allow them to be effective on the ground, don't allow them to hold the ball for 40 minutes. I mean, if they do that, Carolina can win this game. But if Stanford holds the ball forever and turns and wears them down, then it's going to be hard for them to win. So I don't know what more analysis there really is when, to me, it seems like a very simple thing that is going to decide this game. In addition to all the other things, like, you know, crazy special teams play or 1,000 turnovers by one team or the other. I mean, we all know that. But just as far as the basic thing, Carolina's got to stop the run.
McCaffrey being out, like, I'm disappointed personally because I would like to see him play because usually I fall asleep when his games are on.
Right.
But in terms of how I feel about what a Tar Heel victory would mean, it doesn't really change it that much. I mean, Carolina needs to win the game.
Yeah. There was a really good piece, and there have been a lot of pieces starting to be generated on Mitch Trubisky here. This particular one was Sports Illustrated,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
That came out in the middle of last week, and I just thought it was a really good article. I mean, it just had a lot of things that you wanted to know. Talked to Bryn Renner about Mitch Trubisky's recruiting visit. Talked to Blake Anderson, who's the Tar Heel coach, of course, now the head coach at Arkansas State, was the offensive coordinator for the Heels at the time, and talked about his recruitment of Mitch Trubisky. Of course, talked to Mitch himself. I just thought it was a really cool article that even as someone who has covered Mitch Trubisky, you just learn so much about him because in reality, he's a pretty reserved individual.
And I think that sort of speaks to how he's just sort of exploded onto everything. And I think his mom was quoted in that story as talking about how this has messed up their whole family's timeline. Like, they imagine there being another year to do all the, think about the things they're having to think about now. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean he's leaving, but they just hadn't even considered 2 months ago that they might be having these conversations now. And so I think there's a lot of people with catching up to do. And in some ways, I think that's working in his favor because not only do people not know a lot about Mitch Trubisky, they don't know a lot bad about Mitch Trubisky.
Right.
And I think that's helpful for him.
I don't think there is much bad about Mitch Trubisky.
No,
I mean,
I don't either.
I mean, as far as, I mean, I don't claim to be able to nitpick his footwork in the pocket or those kind of things like scouts will. But as far as the person, Mitch Trubisky, from what I know about him and from what everybody else seems to say and know about him, I think you're going to have to look really hard to find some kind of problem there. I mean, he just seems like a first-class dude.
That was funny, that anecdote and that story about how he called to talk to the Sports Illustrated writer. Was like, hello, this is Mitchell Trubisky, the quarterback at the University of North Carolina. Some people in his position would be like, yo, this is Mitch.
Right. So Mitch and the Tar Heels will be in El Paso for the Sun Bowl. And the mayor of El Paso is Oscar Leeser. We, being the intrepid journalists mm-hmm. that we are.
Yeah.
Were able to secure an interview with Mayor Leeser. Now, this was a couple days ago because he's a busy man. But we had an opportunity to speak to him about the Sun Bowl, about El Paso, and to get some important questions answered. So, without further ado, let's talk to the mayor of El Paso, Adam.
First politician on the pod.
Yep.
He's more of a friend than a politician.
Really? This is Oscar Leeser, the mayor of El Paso. Excited to be joined now via the telephone as we get you ready for Carolina's matchup with Stanford in the Sun Bowl is the mayor of the city of El Paso. That is Oscar Leeser. Mayor Leeser, sir, how are you?
I'm doing great and looking forward to having North Carolina at the Hyundai Sun Bowl.
The Hyundai Sun Bowl. That's right.
Yeah, make sure we get that right.
No question about it. Mayor, we here in Chapel Hill just know so little about El Paso just because it is so far away. What are some things that you can tell us about that great city that you were the mayor of?
Well, one of the things that I'm very proud of, I'm not only the mayor of the city of El Paso, but I'm also the corporate sponsor of the bowl game. I'm the Hyundai dealer here, and I've been the sponsor of the bowl game now for the last 7 years. And one of the things that I can tell you about El Paso is El Paso is one of the safest cities in America, over 500,000, and it's something that we're very proud of. We have a new AAA baseball team, which is the Chihuahuas. We have had a lot of investment within our community. Back in about 2012, the people voted on a $472 million quality of life bond, which was to help really grow our city, new parks, new swimming pools, and really a quality of life to make sure for our citizens. And that's one of the things we've been rolling out since I've been mayor. So that's been very exciting.
Mayor Leeser, we will be coming into town a couple days before the game. We're coming after the team. If we and or other Carolina fans only have 48 hours in El Paso, what should we do? What should we see? Where should we eat? What fill out our itineraries for us?
Well, one of the things you should see is, right now the downtown. We've really invested quite a bit of money in downtown, our Christmas lights. And believe it or not, you can come to downtown El Paso and do ice skating.
Wow.
We opened up an ice skating rink that'll be open till In the Southwest, can you imagine an ice skating rink? So it's a lot of fun. The El Paso Zoo is beautiful, and El Paso is surrounded. We have a great partner by Fort Bliss. Fort Bliss has over 35,000 troops, so our military is a big part of our community. But everyone talks about our Mexican food, but really we have great restaurants. We have great partnerships. Our Mexican food is by far the best in the country. But we also have other great restaurants in El Paso that have opened up. Ruth Chris opened up here recently and has become one of their number one restaurants in the country. So, and we have, food is not all we want you to try. We really want you to feel free to walk through El Paso, walk downtown, meet our citizens, our smiling faces. And, of course, then we have a lot of Sumble things. And if you're only going to be here for 48 hours and you're here 2 days before the game, we have our fan fiesta where we have the teams and we have a lot of things that go on downtown at the Civic Center that has to do with the bowl game.
Mayor Lisa, you mentioned walking around, which we're going to have to do because we plan to eat a lot. Now, you mentioned the Mexican food. That is something that is important to us because we feel like that is something we have to do. Where do you go when you want to go get – and you when people come to visit, you tell them this is the place you got to go. They've got the best Mexican food in El Paso.
I can tell you're trying to get me in trouble with some of these people. I can already tell. But, there's a place that's really well-known in El Paso. And, there's Avila's Mexican Food Restaurant, Dominguez on Airways, and there's the LNJ. The LNJ is one of our oldest restaurants in El Paso, and it's very authentic Mexican food. So there's literally, and I'm not hundreds of restaurants that really have quality food that if you wanted me to name them, we'd have to give you more than 5 or 6 minutes to kind of name them all. But you can walk in any of them that are in El Paso, and I can almost guarantee you will not be disappointed.
We're speaking to Oscar Leeser, who is the mayor of El Paso. Okay, Mayor Leeser, this is something that we researched about El Paso, and we couldn't believe it, so we definitely wanted to ask you. We saw, now you can tell me if this is true or false, that there is some old law on the books in El Paso, and I'm not saying that it's enforced because I'm guessing it's not, but that there is an old law on the books that in all churches and public buildings, I think it was maybe post office and railroad depots, things like that, in El Paso, that there is a requirement to have a spittoon in the building. Do you have you ever heard of that law being actually a part of the laws in El Paso?
Well, I can tell you that at City Hall and in my office, I don't have one next to me. So,
so we know that for sure. We can go ahead and cross those. We can cross those off the list. We're talking to Oscar Leeser, the mayor of El Paso. I do have one football-related question for you, Mayor. It came out earlier today as we do this interview that Stanford's Christian McCaffrey had elected to not play in the bowl game. Certainly didn't have anything to do with El Paso or the Sun Bowl, but just elected to not play in the game as he prepares for the NFL draft. Well, was there some disappointment from your side of things just because that was such a big name and one of the main draws for that game?
No, you know what? The main draws for the game is two great schools. And, North Carolina and Stanford are two great schools. And I used to play football. And one thing I can tell you, it's a team of teammates. It's not a one-man team. So we're really excited to see that. And I know you're going, okay, really? No, really. It really is that not one person will make the difference. And I'm excited to have Stanford here. And I'm excited to have North Carolina here because it is a team sport.
Mayor, there's so many kind of bowl games that have come around lately, but the Sun Bowl and now the Hyundai Sun Bowl is one that's been around for so long. What is it about El Paso and this bowl game that have made it such an important part of college football around New Year's Day?
And it is the second oldest bowl game. Do you know what is the oldest bowl game?
I would guess the Rose Bowl.
Pretty good guess. You didn't realize you were going to be quizzed while you were talking.
That's right. I stay on my toes all the time, Mayor. I'm always ready.
No, but it is the second oldest bowl game. And, what makes a difference is the people. We have so many volunteers. And a lot of times when the teams come and the families and they come, they come back afterwards because of the hospitality. And that makes a big difference. At the end of the day, we're still putting on a great football game, but really we're earning your respect, and our people will totally make the difference. And I know the people from North Carolina, when they come here, they're probably going to call back and say, you know what, Mayor, you were 100% correct. The people made the difference, and that's why we want to come back.
That is Mayor Leeser from El Paso, nice enough to give us a few minutes this afternoon. And, Mayor, I think, is it fair to say that El Paso rocks? I think that is a fair statement, right?
I think that's an understatement, so you need to say it really firm. But yes, El Paso is really, really rocks.
Mayor, thank you so much for joining us, and we're looking forward to getting down there and seeing the Tar Heels.
Are you all coming down here yourselves?
Yes, sir. We'll be there. We'll be there with the Tar Heels. We are coming after the team, but we will be there a couple days after the team.
I know the team is arriving at 6 p.m. roughly El Paso time on Christmas Day, and I look forward to being there and greeting the team and welcoming to our great city.
Fantastic! Thank you so much for giving us a few minutes. I know you're a busy man, and look forward to getting down to your city here in a couple of days.
Thanks. I look forward to meeting you in person.
Well, Adam, it's official. El Paso rocks.
It really, really rocks.
Not just really rocks. Really, really rocks.
You know, Jones, I don't know if this was brought up in that interview, but he's not just the mayor of El Paso.
He's not?
Nope.
What else is he, Adam?
He also, I believe, may have a connection to Hyundai there in El Paso.
That's another thing. It's Hyundai.
Would you shut up with your grammatical skepticism?
It's like you're combining Honda and Hyundai.
I am.
Hyundai. Hyundai.
Hyundai.
It's like a... the best part is your face. It's like you're trying to relearn everything you've ever known. You're like, Hyundai.
So what's the right way to do it?
Well, I'm not saying I do everything right.
Yeah, that kind of is what you're saying.
But I've always said Hyundai.
Hyundai.
Yeah. Like,
Hyundai.
Like it's H-U-N-D-A-Y.
There's a Y in there.
Yeah, it's Hyundai.
Okay.
Daisy.
I'm not going to say it anymore.
Okay.
I'm just going to call it the Sun Bowl, and you're going to make Mayor Leeser mad, and it's going to be on you. All the depressed auto sales are going back to you. It's like Carolina in 2009 in the national championship game when they ruined the economy of Detroit. You're doing the same to that company that I cannot pronounce.
I will give Mayor Leeser credit. Well, first of all, for joining us, and we do appreciate it.
Yeah.
But then when we asked him about the spittoons and he goes, well, I don't have one in my office. That's all I can tell you. I thought that was a great way to answer that question. That was funny.
I feel like we might get to see his office when we're there.
I wouldn't mind meeting him.
Well, take a test drive and you can.
In what?
An automobile. Or perhaps, as they call it there in El Paso, a horseless carriage.
All right. Well, this is a busy stretch coming up.
Yes.
There is Carolina Monmouth coming up on the 28th. Then just 2 days later, El Paso. And then the day after that, conference play begins, Tar Heels, Georgia Tech. And then next week, man, we got podcasts, we got Clemson, and then I think in State the next game after that.
Yeah, Saturday at the Smith Center.
So, buckle up.
Buttercup.
It is time to make it happen. Anything else, Adam, before we shut this thing down?
You made me think of this because of something you said earlier, but I don't remember what, and I probably would pronounce it wrong anyway. But with Monmouth coming to town, that means King Rice is coming to town?
Yep.
King Rice tells some of the funniest stories of any former Target. Like, he's a funny dude.
He is incredibly funny.
And one of my favorite stories that he tells is when he was being recruited by North Carolina. And he, as he tells it, he thought he was kind of an awesome guy and thought very highly of himself. And so the phone rang and his mom was like, King, it's for you. And King picked up the phone, like probably on like the landline as they had in those days. He goes, yo, this is King. And the voice on the other end said, hello, King. This is Dean Smith at the University of North Carolina. And King goes, and so what I did then was I said, oh, this is not King at all. Hold on. Let me go get him for you. And like puts the phone down and comes back in like 10 seconds and goes, Hello, Coach Smith. This is King Rice.
Hello, this is Mitchell Trubisky.
But I think that's the funniest story, and I'm looking forward to seeing King Rice because he always has such great things to say about his time at Carolina and has a really good team.
There are numerous examples of this, and I don't want to speak out of place or like act like I know more about this than I do. But to me, King Rice is someone who has been affected in a positive way as much as anybody who has come through Carolina basketball. I mean, he himself talks a lot about that he was kind of a knucklehead in just some decisions that he made when he was young. And even through his professional career, he's had some challenges. But, like, the foundation of Carolina basketball and the Carolina basketball family, I think you put Phil Ford probably in this conversation too, seems to have positively affected him as much as anybody. Do you agree with that?
He spoke at the
first. Or at least he speaks about it, sorry.
Yeah, he spoke at the first reunion that Coach Williams had when he came back. I think that was the first season Coach was here. And before he went to speak, there were a couple of people who said, King was kind of out there when he was here.
Right.
And I wonder what he's going to talk about. And his speech was awesome. And when he finished, I mean, there were people, grown men crying, but enough about me. and everybody agreed. You know, that was the best speech. And Michael Jordan spoke that night. So, you know, pretty heady company. And he summed it up perfectly and seems to really get it. And evidently, too, he must be a really good coach.
Yeah. I mean, he has Monmouth playing at as high a level as you can probably expect Monmouth to be playing, and has done it now for multiple seasons, mm-hmm. not just like one great year where all the stars align. Just to add to what you said before we go, when Coach Smith passed away, we had a Roy Williams Live mm-hmm. within like a day or two. I think it was the next day, actually. Mm-hmm. And on that particular episode, all we did was talk about Coach Smith. And a large majority of the show were former players calling in. We talked to Antoine Jameson, and Eric Montross came by and spoke. Talked to Phil Ford, John Swofford, not a former Carolina basketball player, but obviously very important in Carolina athletics and the ACC. They all called in and spoke, and King Rice did as well. And just to back up what you're saying, I mean, he was as eloquent and poignant about Coach Smith and just his meaning, and he just summed it up right. He just, what he said was right, and didn't say it in some kind of, he said it right too. Does that make sense? Like, it wasn't a look at me or
right.
it was just the right tone, the right words, the right message. He gets it as much as anybody.
Yes,
I think
I agree.
So anyway, King Rice has a really good team, and Carolina's going to have to try and beat them. And that's the last time that the Tar Heels will play non-conference until hopefully the postseason, where they'll get an opportunity to play somebody not in the ACC again. All right. Adam, anything else?
That's all.
All right. Well, this is our only podcast this week with all the travel and the holidays and such. But don't worry. We'll be right here waiting for you. Next week on the next edition of the Carolina.
The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.
Wouldn't it be nice if your cash savings could just grow by itself? With the Wealthfront Cash Account, it can. Earning 4% annual percentage yield from partner banks on your uninvested cash. Nearly 10 times the national average. Just imagine if other things in your life worked the way Wealthfront works. If your house plants grew at 10 times the average rate, you'd have 10 times fewer issues with sad, stunted succulents. Your crocodile ferns would grow to the size of crocodiles. Wealthfront's cash account keeps your money thriving just like that, earning you an industry-leading rate with no account maintenance fees and with free 24/7 instant withdrawals so you can access your money whenever you need it. Money works better here. Go to Wealthfront.com to start saving. Cash account offered by Wealthfront Brokerage, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC. Wealthfront is not a bank. The APY on cash deposits as of December 27, 2024 is representative, subject to change and requires no minimum. Funds in the cash account are swept to partner banks where they earn the variable APY. The national average interest rate for savings accounts is posted on FDIC.gov as of December 16, 2024.